What is up, FIFA Tears? Hello and welcome back to the 3 Foot Tears podcast with myself, LAJS, as well as BRAD86 and Merzgoth. How are we all doing this week?
Doing good. I'm feeling pretty warm, I'm not going to lie. I don't know about you guys, but it is so muggy again.
I'm not feeling too bad in terms of the weather, but I'm a little bit disappointed with something today, but other than that, I'm all good.
And we will get to that in due course. But we will start off with anything that a FIFA podcast would do, and that's talking about FIFA. Shock, horror. We have got ourselves some new players come out for the pre-season. We have got ourselves a Bayern Munich Sadio Mane, which does look very tasty. Striker cards. 99 pace, 99 dribbling, 96 shooting, 95 passing. Absolutely destroying teams. Have any of you tried this? Have any of you sort of been tempted to link him up with maybe the Gravenberch that came out the other week?
I've literally only just completed him today. So haven't used him yet, but I will probably maybe at some point this week or something feature him or do something with him, because it seems a waste to do such a good looking card and not get some use out of him. And like you say, there are a couple of other really nice cards to use alongside him to get him chem. So, yeah, it would be a shame not to.
See, for me, the biggest problem, like, with this week's moments is they're all pretty much the same position. So it's like picking and choosing who to genuinely use within a team.
Yeah, I get that.
100%. I have decided to actually do one of these, and we move on to a man who I said would win the Golden Boot this year, for better and for worse. We do have Moments Sterling at centre forward, 5-star, 4-star, high, medium, 5-7, 99s in everything that really matters. It looks like a very tasty card on paper. I haven't used a centre forward Sterling card since about FIFA 16, though. So, when you used to have informs there, so not one that I've yet to try, but again, all of these are really easy to link at this point, and the 85 times 10, we're presuming tomorrow, as we're recording this on a Sunday, will be going to being no more limits. We still have the 10 currently, but tomorrow we are predicting that it will be going to unlimited.
We can hope so. I have used that card. I did a video around that card, and that card is absolutely ridiculous. It is it's obviously late in the game to say it, but it is my favourite card this year. The way it feels and the way he bursts head of pace, and then like is what I found actually, which was surprised me the most, because like pace obviously you expect him to have, and agility you expect him to have with that low centre of gravity. His accuracy and his shooting is ridiculous. He is insanely good. So yeah, enjoyed using that card just for that one video, and he is going to try and find his way into my actual team.
And as predicted, I have got a small plug in my hand for when I expected that to happen. Merz, have you tried that Sterling card at all?
No. Generally speaking, I feel like I'm kind of touching grass a little bit, but
what?
Not in the sense of actually like not playing FIFA. I just generally think it's just because I'm mainly playing pro clubs now.
Doing
Ultimate Team, and when I am doing Ultimate Team, I'm spending most of my time either doing these 85 plus packs on two accounts, doing the SBCs, and then just doing like anything towards FIFA 23. I am now pretty much in a state of mind that I'm like, what's the point of caring about division rivals? What's the point of caring about foot champs? You know, just chill, relax, be in a relaxed state of mind, ready for the full slog fest when FIFA 23 comes out. Because I think that's the problem. I don't want to get myself in a burnt-out situation when FIFA 23 comes out. I don't want to be grinding hard on FIFA 22 when there is just not much time left on the game. And then I'm like, I just can't be bothered to play FIFA 23 now because I've just been playing the game way too much.
Yeah,
that's the exact situation a lot of FIFA players have been saying. And honestly, Merz, a lot of FIFA players would say, hello, we've been doing this since about June. So Me, myself, I've started coming back into the scene. The card that I was expecting Brad to be ranting and raving about is the one that came out today. The 98 Dybala that you've been begging for.
Literally in the middle of completing it right now.
9 months. I have used this card. His record for me currently, considering I've been doing the golden goal game mode as well, is looking at 7 games played.
Yep.
He has got 5 goals and 6 assists. So some of these were in rivals, some of these were in the preseason cup.
Yep.
But yeah, solid. He's an absolute monster.
Yeah,
he's an
absolute like
monster like you'd expect him to be. Him alongside Moments Puskas, I did finally get that SBC done. What a unit. Dybala playing from the cam roll with Puskas playing more of a... He's been playing more of the out-and-out goal scorer role, hence so many assists for Dybala, but those two are an absolute weapon.
I can imagine, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he is one of my... He was my favourite card last year.
And he still could be this
year. And he still could be this year.
Not yet to try him.
Yeah, I'm not yet to try him. So, I mean, whilst I say Sterling kind of is, and also naturally, or very easily rather, fits in my team, whereas Dybala would rely on me to have to change my team quite a lot. However, fortunately, obviously, with her packing a lot of special cards, it wouldn't be that hard to change said team. And maybe even, like you've done, use some of these 85 times 10s to complete an icon or two. I actually did toy with the idea of doing Puskas, because actually, in terms of the other icons available, the amount of SBCs to complete him actually isn't bad. It's only 10, where I was looking like Eusebio's like 14. Obviously, you've got the big boys. Mm-hmm. Pelé is 25. Ronaldo, I don't need to do because I've got him. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to try him. And if he is as good or maybe even better than Sterling, they could both find their way in. And then I feel like I've got some team.
That sounds naturally like a 4-2-2 to try and get chemistry. And one way to actually get chemistry that you can do is via... Let me just scroll along to it. Find the actual name. The year-in-review player pick. So I got offered in mine. I didn't record it like an idiot. But I did get offered the Footy's Tammy Abraham. You could also get the Jordan Veretout for a strong link.
Yep.
Or, in my case, I got Mason Mount as my one that I took. Because I already have Abraham. But it's offering you chances at players like Neymar if you don't want to complete about 16 different SBCs in one. You can get a lot of great cards in that year of view. It repeats once a day.
Yeah.
And it expires in about 4 days' time. So you've got a few chances to get some very, very nice untradeables.
Yes, I did actually. In the first one I did, which would be a strong link to Dybala, I got Barella, which I thought was a very good pull. I was pretty happy with that.
Merz, have you done any of your... have you either done Dybala and used him, or have you done your year in review player picks?
Dybala, I have just completed him as we're speaking. He will happily go straight into my team because I've got red pick Dybala, who is currently in my main team. So yeah, it's just an easy straight swap for that hit for him. As for the year in review... Generally speaking, there is no point me doing it on my main account because I did all the footies cards, so there's no point getting that. I've done mainly all the important end of an era cards, so again, can't really get anything decent there. And shapeshifters wise, again, like I pretty much did like a lot of the SBCs for that. The only one that I probably could get is Ollie. Then it's the swaps one, so like Kimpembe, basically. So for me, I just feel if I do it, I'm just going to end up seeing 4 dupes each and every time. So for me, it's like not really much point doing it. But on my second account, I've done it twice. I've got Kimpembe's 92 card, and I got...
Nice.
And I picked Footy's Depaul.
This is an interesting thing. Do we think these cards should be in there? Because, like, you know, people grind the tokens to get those things, and they've been put into this. Now, we fall into, like, a grey area there. They weren't really an SBC, although technically they were, but you had to earn the tokens to use them. And they obviously weren't an objective either, although technically they were, because you had to do objectives on some of them to get the tokens. So are we okay with those cards featuring in there, or is it another case of like EA sort of annoying the people that did the tokens and used them on that player?
Considering it's not guaranteed to get them, I think it's perfectly reasonable to give people a chance to use cards they would not have access to otherwise. But by the same logic was the original one back in January, pointless, when you could have done the SBCs at the time, you could have done the objectives at the time. The whole concept of the year in review player pick that you're saying, even dating back to the one at the beginning of the year, is pointless in that regard. We don't just have to look at now's one, you can look back at the previous one where they screwed up with Edward.
Yeah.
I do feel a little bit like maybe the objective cards shouldn't necessarily be in them, but the swap token ones, I do feel, because like it's those hard situations when it comes to swaps that you go, you can have like maybe the discard packs, or you could go for like a player, like shapeshifter's player pick, or you can just go for that one player, and the majority of us will bypass that one player unless it's looking like an absolute OP player, like maybe something like the Ben Yedder or the 95 version of Kimpembe. But most of the time, we go with the fodder packs, and then we work it out, and we can't get the players because you either don't grind out all the tokens available to get that player, in which case that gives that like one inkling opportunity to get it. Whereas I feel like objectives, most of the time, the objectives aren't that like that too time consuming anyway to do, and most of the time people who don't want to do the objectives just don't want to do the objective players in the first place, so putting them in there I feel it's just like a bit of a cheap option of just bringing down the pack weight, I guess.
A little bit, but I'm happy to get that Mason Mount considering I wasn't playing FIFA that week, and that's a pretty useful card for me to pick up, so I'm more than happy to have objectives in there.
Yeah, I don't think I've got...
It's another interesting card that you can get.
I don't think I've got as much problem of ejected cards being there than I have for ones where tokens have been spent. Because obviously, if people knew that there was going to be a chance to get that card again, they may have spent their tokens differently. Whereas, like Luke said, it's just that he missed out on doing that because of the time of not being there during that SBC. That's what that gives you a chance to do. But we should make a note as well that Neymar isn't available in this SBC. So don't go and try and get yourself footies, Neymar.
Obviously, Batch 2's out. The main important thing about Batch 2 is that we do have the Shapeshifters Messi back in packs, I believe. So no real shocks there. We kind of alluded to that last week. But something that did happen this week was there was a new season, and I want to get your guys' take on this. Do you like where this has gone, where the level 15 player and level 30 player, the stuff I normally absolutely love doing, are no longer there? They've been replaced with a 25k pack for level 15 and an 85 times 10 for level 30. Is that something you want to see a bit more permanently? That maybe one of those is replaced with a pack and then you get a unique player in a different one? Or do you think they should stick to players or just go straight to packs? What's your sort of takes on those?
I mean, for me personally, I would not want to see this as a permanent basis for situation. Because especially with how chemistry is changing in FIFA 23, which gives you the opportunity to build more fun-looking teams and just something a little bit different, having, especially this FIFA, where it's always been off-league players, whereas in previous years you've had main league players, gives that opportunity to maybe have some fun, different-looking cards. Even if maybe they're not always being the most desirable or OP looking of players, but it just is that additional option. Also, some people consider it as free fodder as well, which is another sort of situation. But the problem is with FIFA 23, with the fact that they're adding this moments mode, maybe you don't, maybe EA don't see it as quite needing to have these level 15 and 30 players, maybe going into FIFA 23, because of the fact that they might just shift those players into that mode instead. But it would be nice to maybe have those on top. But it all depends on how FIFA 23 is going to handle things, because I haven't really played beta, so I don't know how it's looking, to be fair, with like the rewards and these moments and stuff like that. But that would be my guess anyway.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think if the moments seem to be that you're going to be able to get a player, then it seems then pointless to do seasons of, like, to get a player as well. Because then they're going to, like, I wouldn't say they'll run out of players, because, you know, they exhaust the Portuguese league in this one. There's plenty of other leagues they could exhaust and get special cards from. But it does seem a little bit strange to have two modes where you can get essentially like a free objective player, as well as then being able to get them through SBCs. So maybe it would just be a little bit overkill. So yeah, packs, I wouldn't mind. It's just about how they, I suppose, determine the level of packs. Obviously, it's more likely that we're going to see, like, right at the start of the game, that top thing may only be like 100k back, because I don't think they'd want to go too far too early. But, you know, some people get there naturally. Some people get there just by playing the game naturally. Others need to sort of focus on those gold, bronze and silver objectives to actually make sure they get enough to get to level 30. Whereas some people are just playing through the game at their normal pace, just make level 30 anyway. So, yeah, I think for those that don't play it as much, it will be maybe some incentive to grind it more if there are packs available to... Because, you know, the other thing as well is, especially at the start of the game, if we're given, like, untradeable packs more often in those season's objectives, then it helps with SBCs at the start of the game, because everybody's got chem, and that is obviously massive with completing those starter SBCs.
Mm-hmm. But do you not think a 100k pack would be too much too early? Like, they don't like to normally bring them out till Black Friday. That's the thing, when you normally first see 100k packs and 125s and things like that. They normally try and keep it under wraps.
The only reason I picked that one out of my head is because I was just thinking, in your first lot of Div Rivals rewards or even Foot Champs rewards, you're probably going to be able to get those packs. So by the time it gets to level 30, we'd have probably have be what, 5 weeks in? Before
about
someone,
that, yeah, and champs normally starts off about 2-3.
Yeah, so by that point, those packs have already been available to people via rewards anyway. So I don't know. That was just why I picked that out in my head. But yeah, maybe they wouldn't. Maybe they'd just start with a 50k pack as top end, because at the end of the day, it's free and yeah, you're cheap.
Pretty much.
Sorry, stingy. I didn't mean to say cheap.
Yeah, you can't slander them too hard, God. What we'll do then is we will move on to the big controversy this week, which did involve FIFA 23. Xbox users getting a early access. They said early access didn't exist this year. It was the same time as EA Play. Oh, how wrong they were. When, for about 2 hours, I believe, yep, Xbox pre-orders were able to hop on, check the ratings, check everything, and yeah, they already know what's in store.
Yeah, so what I understand from it, because I only saw like people talking about it as opposed to it actually being, you know, happening, is that they got 2 hours of being able to go onto the game, couldn't get onto Ultimate Team, but you could play everything else basically, career mode and all that other stuff, and check out the game nice and early for 2 hours on Xbox One only. That's why people, I think, originally said they thought it was a Microsoft error or something, but then EA apologise.
They could go on foot, by the way, because they got some of the player ratings and stuff, because we now know what, like, the top rated players are and stuff.
Oh,
so
okay.
The highest rated player, I mean, I say spoiler alert, but
it's out there now.
It's a bit of a spoiler.
It's out there now.
It's out there. You can easily find it. 91 rated is the highest rated player. There's no 92 or 93 rated player. So the ratings definitely come down in terms of the max, which is a bit intriguing, because we've spoken about this like pretty much almost a year ago.
Yeah, about how, I mean, arguably, we'd probably still say that's a bit too high. But yeah, we have said this, haven't we, that if they wanted to sort of have more room for progression with special cards, then start them a lot lower in the game. And yeah, whether they've done that intentionally or whether they just think that's the rating those cards deserve this year, it works either way in the same vein.
I mean, I didn't get a chance to see what Andre Silva was, so I'm very upset. I fear that he might no longer be aboard, so I need that quelling ASAP.
Someone's got to have put a Leipzig ratings up, surely.
Leipzig. for the last time, it's Leipzig. So we're going to go over to Merz for a second. There is something that he's been looking into a lot about how chemistry styles are working this year. And, well, certain ones have been buffed and certain ones haven't they, Merz?
Yeah, so basically EA have released a updated pitch notes for chemistry in FIFA 23 and Ultimate Team. So they've made it a little bit easier, actually, to get the maximum chemistry four player, which is the three diamonds. However, the biggest change, and one that I'm probably going to have a bit of an issue with, because having 10 chem and having stat boost was always a big thing, they've reduced how much of a boost players get. So let me just use the basic as an example. So in FIFA 22, if you had basic chemistry 10 chem on a player, then you could basically get plus 85 across the stats, basically. So whether it would be like 5 here, 5 there, blah, 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 it all adds up to 85. On FIFA 23, if you got a 3 diamond player, so on the equivalent of 10, you only get a plus 68 across the board on in-game stats. So that's a massive decrease of 17 in-game stat boosts. Now, if you're looking further down the line, on 2 and 1 star, you're getting plus 34 on a basic if it's on 2 star, and plus 17 if it is a 1 star. So, it's a little bit of an interesting situation, because although they changed this whole dynamic of chem styles and how it's going to work in FIFA 23, the fact that you're getting less of a boost is a big one. And say, for instance, you're using Hunter, plus 10 on acceleration, plus 10 on the sprint speed you would have got in FIFA 22. You're getting only a plus 8 now. So it's a decrease of 20%. And it's a 20% is going sort of almost across the board. They've really dramatically changed things, EA. And I still don't know what to make of this situation. I kind of a bit annoyed. But then again, they have done this before with, like, say, the Shadow, when it used to give you a plus 15 on the acceleration, and I think it was 2 FIFAs ago, so back like last FIFA, so FIFA 21, they reduced it down to 10 on the acceleration rather than the plus 15. So it's not unheard of, but it's the fact that they've done this. I just, what do you guys think about the whole chain reducing the amount of boost that you get for full chem and even 1 or 2 diamonds?
So is it going to be the same and even across the board?
What as in, like, you get boosts across, like, you still get the same boost. So, like, when you so imagine, like, you got your Shadow, so you get your boost on your defensive stats,
yeah,
and your acceleration, you're still getting that,
yeah,
but in terms of, like, the plus you're getting is reduced. So, like, the acceleration and sprint speed is no longer plus 10, it's plus 8. Any of the defensive stats where it's plus 5 is now plus 4. You might still get that one plus 15. In fact, I've got the chart up. So, name a chemistry style that you really like using.
Finisher.
A finisher. So, like, say, for finisher, you're going to get a plus 8 on the attack positioning. You still get plus 15 on the finishing, but you only get, like, plus 4 on the shot power, plus 4 on penalties, plus 8 on volleys, plus 8 on agility, plus 4 on balance, plus 15 on agility. So you still got, like, those big ones in there, but the more medium to minor ones have been made even smaller in terms of the improvement, basically.
Okay.
FIFA analyst, or as he's called now, Alex B, put it this way. It's more aimed to make pay to win a bit more of a thing, so that, like, the top tier, the people using those smaller, cheaper players that really need these chem style boosts to compete with these, like, higher top tier, bigger in-game stat players.
Yeah,
they don't get as much of a boost to make them on par with them, so that you're more encouraged to get the bigger players, the promo players, or the players with the better stats, basically.
Yeah, so you can't, like, of the olden days use that Joe Gomez anymore, because actually if you come up against someone with all those higher defensive stats who's got a pace boost on them or something, they're going to be a lot better. I get
exactly.
It. Yeah, that does make sense. And in that case, yeah, EA suck even more than they usually do.
I view this slightly differently.
Mm-hmm.
I view this as a counterpart to the fact that you can no longer get negative chemistry. We forget the fact that chemistry is now going to no longer mean when I'm using like a stupid team and people are on zero chemistry and getting minus 15 in every stat. Now they'll perform to their face stats.
Hmm.
That's a big difference that we're forgetting here that I think is factoring in a way. You can look at it in the pay-to-win factor, but I think you've got to take in some way when someone decides, oh, I'm going to start this guy and sub someone on or something, or if someone's... it stops people having to play someone for chemistry almost specifically how they had used to, say... I'm trying to think of a player who justify that. Say putting... If you want to use Orsic and you have to go, oh, I guess I'll put Modric one side and an Icon up striker or something. And
Kramaric up top. Yeah.
It sort of causes less of that, but I think it's more of a... You can't get negative chemistry and just be punished for putting someone in, so rather than getting a boost, you can just take the standard option. Rather than nowadays, if you go, I'm just going to chuck in Antony into my United team. Oh, what's that? He's on 4 chemistry. He's getting like minus 4 in every stat. He's not going to perform as well. It's just going to perform to the face guard stats, really.
Yeah.
That's how I view it. Maybe I'm in a rare situation where I'm glass half full rather than always glass empty.
But then I would say how many people generally were playing people in the negative stats in FIFA 22 or before FIFA 22, basically.
You don't see it often.
Yeah. But like you say, people would use the subs and stuff. But even like if you looked at it from, say, like using somebody on equivalent of 7 chem, even they technically are getting less of a stat boost as well. So, because we're only talking about those that are on maximum chem. If we're talking about what somebody is on, I guess 2-star is equivalent. I would say 2-stars is equivalent of what 7 chem was. So that would be like if we're looking at like again the shadow, it's 4-4-4-2-2-4-8 basically. So it's getting like
6-6-6-3-3-6-8. But I think it's more of a freedom sort of thing. You're free to do what you want, so there's not as much of a drawback. That's how I view it.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, like, I would... This is what's drawn me away from maybe going, do I actually want to go for the full chem? Or do I want to go for the full chem? I mean, this is actually mainly going towards those that do actually kind of want the truly meta teams and the OP teams. Because now they're like, well, actually, because you're not getting as much of a stat boost if you have a full chem team or have a one league team now, you can go for all these meta players in different leagues and different nationalities and different positions and stuff and having them in the team. And I kind of think that actually it's probably going to get more boring looking teams being coming up against like week in, week out, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's
always potential for something to happen.
Yeah.
It's maybe going to make people a little bit more selective, I suppose, in doing SBCs as well. Like with certain people doing RTGs and things where they're going to use their fodder. Because obviously you don't just want to go and do that one player because actually he doesn't fully fit in your team, so his chem boosts are going to be lacking and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. And talking of lacking, we move on to the RL football. And, well, lacking is one thing... I wouldn't really describe this fixture. This had everything but a goal, and that is the 0-0 between Everton and Liverpool.
Yep.
What a game.
What a
0-0.
Game. Yep. Insane game. Like... how there wasn't a goal is beyond me anyway, but to be fair, you got to hand it to not just, like, I know from this, like, you know, Pickford got man of the match. I get it. He made some fantastic saves. Alisson also made some brilliant saves. But defensively as well, both teams actually did defend really, really well. It was like a defensive and goalkeeping masterclass on how to, like, have the most exciting nil-nil ever, basically. What I will say is, though, Mope should definitely score that.
Yes, he kicked that straight at the goalkeeper.
He just,
basically.
Yeah, he didn't look. He didn't look, did he? Didn't look up.
And no composure, basically. A lack of composure.
Just got there, saw his, like, you know, saw his chance to get a goal, and just unfortunately kept his head down and hits it within. I mean, Alisson, don't get me wrong, has closed down fairly quickly and spread himself well, but really, like, if he just looks up and puts that in the side of the net, then, you know, they've scored. But likewise, I don't necessarily think that necessarily means they deserve to win the game. I just think that that was a great opportunity for him to get on a score sheet for them. But yeah, fantastic. Fantastic 0-0. Whoever thought you'd say that? Fantastic 0-0.
It really was. It had everything. It had a disallowed goal. It had a potential red card. It had so much going on. Two post hits in the same move for Liverpool.
Yep.
It was such a good bit of football, and Pickford had an amazing game.
Amazing, yeah. And like that was funny. Like, I saw the post match interview as well, where they were talking about that last save onto the post, and they were like, "Did you get a hand onto that?" He's like, "Yeah, of course I did." He's like, "It was so funny because I was like, yes, like we saw that he got a hand on it. That was what made it even more brilliant, was how fantastic a save it ended up being, because yeah, like there were so many opportunities where there could have been." If we'd have watched highlights of that game, like certain parts of that game, and someone come away and said, "Oh, that game was 2-2," you would not. It's not that you would believe that. That's the thing. You would believe it, because there's no way you'd look at some of the highlights of that game and think, "Hang on, you tell me that finished 0-0? What the hell?" Like, it was, yeah, brilliant, brilliant 0-0, and for neutral fans that was great. But I imagine for, you know, those that are red or those that are blue, maybe, you know, they're a little bit disappointed. But as a neutral, very exciting.
Talking of a red and also a blue, Connor Cody, an ex-red, celebrating as wildly as he did. Something I wasn't expecting, but I'm all here for.
Yeah.
I'm all here for passion merchants.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, we never know, do we, if anything, you know, what happened behind the scenes, or if anything, you know, about why he gets released or how he feels about being sold and all that sort of stuff. So you never do know in those situations. The way he celebrated, I'm guessing he wanted to stick it to them a little bit, which is completely fair enough. He has no real affiliation. It's not like he had, like, you know, years and years of a career and playing in the first team for them. So he doesn't have that kind of unwritten care
bond,
or that, you know, having to be nice or seem to be...
Yeah.
Amicable.
Yeah, he basically just doesn't have to, like, think, "Oh no, I don't want to annoy the fans that supported me in my career all that time." He's just there, like, thinking, you know, I've just scored possibly the winner in the Merseyside derby, and that was pretty much how he reacted. What is this? I mean, that was such a tight offside in a way, like. So this was one part, and we're gonna mention this word very much a lot in this and our next episode of the podcast. The one part on that VAR where they were talking about, like, oh, it's the part of the body that's ahead that you can score with. So his arm didn't factor, but it was his shoulder movement. All this, that's so, like, you got to just think, if his shoulder movement isn't that forward, and that's a goal, like, well, you know, hero.
Yeah, but there's another thing that needs to be factored in. It came off Milner.
Yes.
Milner got a touch on the way through. And apparently now there's a technically change in the rule where because of the Champions League final, because it happened with Benzema, and back then it was like, whether it's clear and unintentional, basically, that's when it's allowed. But now, apparently, whether it's change of direction, whether it's intentional or unintentional, that sort of goal should have been allowed to stand. Apparently, that's what the new rule is. So, whether the referees knew that or not is a different matter entirely.
I would imagine
that is definitely something that sums up the weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I imagine based on what has happened this weekend, they don't know a lot.
Yes, it really does transpire like that, but One thing I do want to mention quickly is we spoke about the maturity of Nunes in recent times, and I'm all here for it, passion merchant, etc. There was one thing he did to Connor Cody. I don't know if you guys have seen this clip, but he, after the goal's been disallowed and Cody's marking him, you just see Nunes just start randomly doing the VAR gesture, like in the small sense to him, to try and get under his skin.
Yeah.
Is that something you're here for, or is that another bit of immaturity on his part for you guys?
I think that's, I don't think that quite falls into the same category for me, in just in the sense that, like, I think that's a way to, like, get under your opponent's skin, knowing that it may give you the advantage on him if he's gonna, like, maybe then bring you down or go in a bit hard on a challenge or something and win you a spot kick or something, or dead ball situation close to the goal. So that's probably why there's that. So that kind of bit of the way that football is played is a thing. Like, we know that is a thing. But that what we're talking about, the immaturity stuff and that, for me, was like mainly just around about his showboating and about the stuff that he was doing before a game is said and done. And obviously then he went and did the headbutt, which was even worse. Like, you know, that sort of stuff needs to be ironed out. But like you alluded to, you don't want to take loads of stuff out of a player, because then he won't be the player that you signed in the first place. But it's just those things, like, you know, that got him sent off and a ban, and, you know, affects their game, and not doing all that fancy stuff before you've actually gone ahead in the game, or are ahead enough in the game to do that, you know, like Richarlison did. Saw what happened to him when he started being a bit fancy, got absolutely clattered. So that stuff on that I don't mind. That to me is just trying to, like, get that little bit of one-upmanship on your opponent to think, do you know what, I'm going to just do this, because if he now, if I can rile him up a little bit and he brings me down, I might be able to win my team a free kick or spot kick here.
Yes, I thought I'd mention it, because I'm pretty certain if Richarlison did that this week, to say if that happens to, I'm trying to think of a centre-back for Fulham, Adorabio, tossing, or if suddenly that happens to him and Richarlison does that, I'm almost certain there would be a media storm again after what happened last week. So I just wanted to make sure there was no sort of thing in there. I just feel that he's the same kind of player as a Richarlison that would get that sort of a heat for it, and it's sort of gone under the radar, which I'm actually happy it's gone under the radar. Really happy it's gone under the radar, because it's a psychological part of a game that, as you mentioned, you're trying to get under someone's skin. But I didn't know if I was expecting it's not the time, you're 0-0, whether that would factor in again. But
yeah, no, I don't think, because I think it's the opposite, isn't it? He's doing it in a way to try and win a decision, as opposed to the other way, where, like, he's doing something before they've won a game. Where, like we said, if he just taps it in or doesn't try and do the fancy thing or whatever, I mean, the headbutt is obviously something completely different. That's just obviously something that he shouldn't do, and, you know, he paid his punishment for it, and hopefully that'll be something that he does take out of his game, because there's not really any room for that on the pitch. But yeah, no, I do think that is slightly different.
And we mentioned VAR earlier. We will cover another game that had a big incident that VAR couldn't do anything about. And it's meant that there are now two unbeaten sides in the league, and one of them is Manchester City, in a game where an under-pressure Steven Gerrard managed to get a point, but should he have had all three? Personally, I think so. I don't know why the play was stopped. It's not the first time it's happened to Villa either. It happened to them the season they nearly got relegated, where everyone points to the fact that, oh, Villa should have gone down because Sheffield United scored and goal line technology failed. But then the same season, Grealish scores after being called out for diving when he's been legitimately fouled, and they went on to score in the same play. It's happened again. Coutinho called offside, and he's not offside. He's then gone and scored, deflecting off of Stones' head. People will say the City players stopped playing because the whistle went, but that would be a perfectly acceptable goal. Nothing was wrong with it. What's your thoughts on that? Nothing VAR can do, but the officials' yep. incompetence showing it again.
Mm-hmm.
That was terrible linesman refereeing right there, because it wasn't like even that like hard of a close decision to make. He was not comfortably onside, but like when you look at it from the replays, you can easily tell he was onside. So yeah, Villa should have got all 3 points without a doubt in that sort of situation. Maybe there's some match fixing going on or something like that, potentially. Maybe the referees have been doing some under the table bets or something like that with some bookies.
Well, I mean, again, if you looked at things that have happened so far this season and an article came out that said there was match fixing, you wouldn't be surprised to hear it, because, yeah, based on some of the things that have happened this year, yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, we're what? How many games? 5 games in?
Six games in,
and, like, already, like, there's been numerous talks about it happening and stuff, and I just don't... Yeah, I don't understand. He's clearly onside. The rule, as far as I was aware, was that you carry on playing and then once the ball's out, then they review it. But in this situation, for some reason, they decided not to. Yes, I get what you're saying. Like, it is clear that the Man City defence stop, so they don't really try and break him down or stop that attack. And certainly Stones didn't know much about it hitting him on the head, because I think he was in a static position waiting to see what was going to happen. But either way, it's just another bad decision. And like, the idea for VAR was to limit these from happenings, but apparently we have incompetent referees who are not using it in the right way or not sticking to the guidelines and rules that have been given to them when they are using it.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that the referees, given an advantage on the play for a second, seeing the flags gone up and Coutinho started going backwards. That's my only justification I can remotely think of, is play started to maybe go backwards, the offside flag's up. He then shoots, but he's starting to go back towards his own side of the pitch. Sort of dribbles out the box, vertically up. Does he think play's going to progress if he's seen an offside flag? That's the only justification I can try and give it.
I know what you're saying.
Does he think he's just going to do a sideways pass off and, oh, look, Villa retaining possession, offside, okay.
Yeah. And this is why, like, it maybe does just need to be a case of, like, they wait until the ball's gone out of play. Now, yes, I do get that that could be ages, like the ball could go out of play in age, but maybe in that time they could still be reviewing it, like, and looking through that footage. And when I say ball going out of play, like, say for instance they flag that, they think he's offside, Coutinho takes that shot and it's straight at Edison and Edison holds the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That is like a stop in play, isn't it? Like, don't get wrong, the ball's not gone out, but it is a stop in play. It's a break in play. There's no fluent motion happening. Yes, they'll then argue, oh yeah, but Edison could then have... Someone was running down the wing and Edison could have picked them out and kicked that ball out, and Man City could have been on the counter-attack. There's always going to be a possible, but they need to determine, like, maybe if it's in the goalkeeper's hands or if the ball's gone out of play, then play can be stopped and then it can be looked at. But otherwise, if there's still a fluent motion of attack and Aston Villa were still in possession at that time, you just have to keep going.
I will drop. We think back to a game a couple of weeks ago that had controversy. You mentioned about staying with it fluidity. At what point does that phase of play not become relevant anymore? I mentioned that because of the Chelsea foul involving Bentancur and also involving Havertz, because that was deemed too long ago, about 40 seconds it was. So if it was from an offside position, I'm now hypothetically speaking, if this was from an offside position and then he goes on to score a minute later, does that get called back for offside, or is that phase of play no longer relevant? It's a fine balancing act. The rules of on guidelines of which they're going by. As much as there is a lot of incompetency from referees, there is a it's a tough job. Let's not pretend for having complete consistency, complete accuracy, and remember everything in the field of play. It's not going to be easy.
Yeah.
Having never reffed a game, I'm not going to suddenly start cussing them out over everything.
No.
That's probably naive. But it's frustrating to see it happen so much this week.
Oh, this week was just... Yeah, I mean, this week, I think... Not only this week did we see some, but we saw some monumental ones. Like, seriously game-changing decisions. And, mm-hmm. like, that could have a massive effect on when it's all said and done. Yeah, don't get me wrong, that's maybe a stupid thing to say, and everyone will say that because there's still however many games from now until then. There's 32 Premier League games to play from now until then. Yes, there is. But if it does ever come down to that one scenario at the end of the season and there's 2 points between first and second, and that team should have got 3 points because of a decision like this, that's the thing that we'll be talking about. Not the games they should have won in the games leading up to it. We'll be talking about these sort of decisions. And it was just this week that they had so many monumental decisions that were game-changing.
So, Merz, you've heard from me, we've heard from Brad, we've heard more than enough from both of us on that. Merz, have you got any take on that?
I think the linesman can only put the flag up anyway if they're 100% sure it was offside.
Supposedly.
If they're not 100% sure, they're meant to keep the flag down anyway.
Until the phase of play, until the ball's gone out of play or
goal
scored or anything.
Yeah.
That's the last we'll really mention of VAR, I think, until extra time. We'll touch in on any sort of major incidents that we can think of after that, but we don't want to sort of get carried away and let us drag on too much. We will end on one more game, and that is, well, it technically has a VAR incident in it that was game changing. It is Man United have again stopped, but well, it's only six games in, so let's not get carried away calling it an invincible run, but Arsenal are no longer undefeated. They do remain top of the table, and there was a VAR for a very, very soft incident on Christian Eriksen. Have you seen this? I assume Merz has. I don't know about you, Brad. But,
no, I haven't.
What are your takes on... What are your takes on this game, Merz, as an Arsenal fan?
My takes... We were a very good performing side. I mean, the way that I visualised Man United were playing was like a team that are bottom half of the table team. Like, sitting back, absorbing, and then countering, basically. That was basically the main... game plan from the offset, pretty much. Never really looked truly comfortable having possession themselves, but they did get the win. In some ways, they deserved the win, even if I could also argue Arsenal deserved the win, but, you know, the scoreline says it all.
Mm-hmm.
As for the incident in the first half of the disallowed goal, when you look at it at normal speed, nothing too bad about it. Just a little bit of a nudge, trying to win the ball back. I mean, again, it comes down to the whole, like, VAR and whole rules and stuff saying in these sort of, like, minor incidents, they should just let them go and leave it to the on-field referee to decide. Obviously, the on-field referee did not blow for it and let the play continue. We've gone and scored. VAR goes and looks at it and goes, deems it as a foul, because when you look at it in slow motion, it looks worse than it is. Basically, and even like the likes of Gary Neville and stuff like that, I was like saying it's a very soft foul. Basically, it's not really much to read into it, but obviously it does have an effect, because then it stays 0-0. They went one goal up, and then we managed to get one back, but then they countered and went to one up. And then we made a really, really weird decision, like taking off a load of defensive players to go all out, even though we were playing really well. Like, if we just stayed as we were playing for those final 20 minutes, might have been able to nick a goal back and got a draw, which would have been nice because we would have stayed unbeaten. Either way, we stayed top of the table, but it would have been an extra point, which is what could always matter at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And... Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we made those changes and we just ended up looking really bad after that point, because it was then pretty much mainly Man United after that point, even though we had some opportunities, but I think it basically killed off the game at that point.
Yeah, there's certain points I'll agree with you on. Certain bits I'm a bit more cagey on, I'll say, but that United did open fairly possession-based, I will say, to start off that game. They, until the goal, were holding on to possession quite a lot, I would argue. But yeah, once that changed very quickly, it did seem a lot of possession to Arsenal. It's good to see Rashford doing well, as much as I don't like seeing United do well, but I also don't like seeing Arsenal at the top of the table, so hopefully that changes in soon. But this is the first, I'll say, real, in terms of name value and namesake, it's the big name of Man United coming to see. And they're on a bit of a run now.
Mm-hmm.
They're on a good four-game run, on a four-game bounce. Where they'll end up at the end of the season, Christ knows, I'm still saying seventh. But based off how they seem to be doing under Ten Hag, maybe that will improve. But my takeaway from this is, people might be ranting and raving about Antony and his goal. I wasn't that impressed with him, honestly. He didn't strike. I'll gladly be proved wrong on this. Antony is probably going to be a bit overrated now, based off of having a goal in that first game. If you look at his play without that goal, and even that goal, I think it's poor from Ramsdale more than it's good from Antony.
He
was mainly shying away from... You'd expect some Brazilian kid with flair to be going at his man, to be trying to take on his man. He seemed to be, he'd be passing it back, playing it safe, and not really taking on Zinchenko or Gabriel or anyone. He'd sort of pass it back, went off after 60 minutes, and his goal, whilst well taken, Ramsdale needs to be doing a lot better. You know this kid has mainly got a left foot, and that's something you can see from how he's playing in the game. Was everything was left foot. That Cruyff pass that he does when Zinchenko, yeah, and I think it's Gabriel, takes him on, goes back. It shows how one-footed he is. Ramsdale's practically shown him the entire far post. He's covered near post, which baffled me. He's not really charged him out, and he's just... It's weird. If you know that this guy is left-footed, he will probably shoot far post. If he shoots near post, fair enough. Like, but that's not my... As a goalkeeper, my gut instinct in that situation is not to cover the near post. It's a winger, left-footed, is going to try and curl it rather than take a stab at near post. I think he's just... As a goalkeeper, I think that's not good from Ramsdale more than it is good from your boy, Antony. And he didn't really do much apart from that.
No, I'm just looking at here for his like stats today. So it says that he had a 7.3 rating, obviously one goal, 75% pass succession, which is not bad, I suppose. It's one of those things where, like, with all the hype and everything around him and that, is it like it's probably, you know, really early right now to be saying how he's going to shape up for Man U. What I will say is, it's nice one for him to get a goal on his debut. But for this game, the thing that strikes me more is the exclusion of Maguire. Because obviously a lot of, not all, but a lot of errors in the previous season were down to him. There are other players in front of him and alongside him that are responsible. But is this now like the way they're going to shape up at the back? Is this now their big, expensive English defender finding himself on the bench?
Yes.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, this is the defence that they've used, the same back four and goalkeeper for the last three games in a row.
I believe so, yeah.
So unless an injury comes along, like to Varane or Martinez, then yeah, Maguire's basically going to be a bit part player, cup games, and maybe some European football.
Which is fair enough, isn't it? They've got there on the back of four wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't think there's a place for him now. He's definitely been pushed out of the squad, and I think they're better for it. They've been playing really well at the back, and when he did come on as a substitute, he looked ropey as hell. He did not look comfortable. He gave away a couple. I'm pretty certain he gave away a couple of sloppy fouls and nearly gave away a penalty. So I do not trust Harry Maguire in the slightest.
No.
We will be back with hot takes this Friday, I'm going to say.
Yep. Friday, yeah.
So you can join me, you can join Merz, you can join Brad, all talking about the likes of VAR, among many other things. I've been NHS. That has been B-Rad. That has been Merz Goff. Thank you for listening to the Three Foot Tears podcast. We will see you next week.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.